We are in Bereishis Rabbah, still in Perek Lamed Aleph, chapter 31, but now up to Midrash Bav. Last time, we saw Hamas retranslated from its most basic meaning of violence or violent theft to mean thwarting justice. In an attempt to try to explain why there is such a harsh penalty given here for what we usually would simply render as violence or theft, and that doesn't really add up, you know, that should lead to the destruction of the world. I already forgot to put on the camera. I set everything up and I didn't start it. You could have said something. Okay. Okay. So presumably it's on now. Okay, so last time we saw Hamas retranslated to mean thwarting justice. This week we're going to see another approach. And it's a second take on Hamas. I brought it here on your sheet as source number one. Davar Acher, alternatively. Kimal'aha aretz Hamas, for the land is filled with Hamas, that phrase that we've already seen. Amar Rabbi Levi. So Rabbi Levi says, Hamas ze avodas kochavim. Hamas ze gilui arayot. Hamas ze shfichut damim. He says, Hamas is idolatry. Hamas is immorality. And Hamas is murder. Okay, that's quite the list. That is, of course, the list known as the Big Three. I'll refer you down to source number two, just to see where this list comes from. It's a Gemara in Yuma's popular issue. Popular, it comes up in various ways in the Gemara. Ein lecha davar she'omed bifnei pikuach nefesh. Nothing stands in the way of saving a life. Chutz me'avod azara v'gilui arayos u'shvichus damim, other than idolatry, sexual immorality, and murder. I see that I translated gilui arayot in two different ways. In the first source, I translated it as just immorality, here sexual immorality. It's the same thing. I'm not sure why I did that. But the point is that this list of the three sins that we're identifying as Hamas is not just a random list of three bad things, but it's the list of crimes that are so bad that you would not be allowed to do them in order to save your life. So if someone said to you, like happens in in the plots of any number of thriller movies, right? Someone comes to you and says, kill so-and-so, and if you don't, then I'm going to kill you, right? So the answer is, sorry. I once had this. This is very funny. I was. This goes back a little over 20 years ago. I was giving a class, and I quoted this. You know, this issue that if someone comes to you and says to kill somebody else or he'll kill you, then you have to die rather than kill somebody else. And this fellow turns to me and he says, "Why don't you just grab the gun?" It had to do with who this person was.
Can I say something?
Yeah, go for it.
I was a psychiatric social worker, and a doctor I worked with was from Poland. And it's a whole other story. But we had a patient who had the same thing, you know, when they had them lined up.
Mm.
And they called him out and they said, kill your brother, or we'll shoot you. He shot his brother.
Mm.
Because he couldn't live with it.
Right. When you talk about the situations that came up practically, it's entirely not a laughing matter. But the line here that we're seeing in source number two is what informs our medrash. Our medrash says that Hamas is the big three. These three sins, which are so bad, you would not be allowed to do them in order to save your life. Now, it's not a random association with these three. We're going to show how the word Hamas can actually be associated with each of these three crimes. And the Medrash continues back in source number one. Hamas ze'avodas kochavim shenemar ki mal'aha aretz Hamas. First of all, Hamas is idolatry, as we saw, because the pasuk says, "Mal'aha aretz Hamas." The land is filled with Hamas. I'm going to come back to that line. We're just going to read it through first. Hamas, Zegilui Arayot, Hamas is sexual immorality. Shenamar, he quotes the sentence in Yirmiyahu, Hamasi Usheiri al Bavel. Hashem says, my Hamas and my She'er are upon Babylon. And obviously I'm going to have to explain what that means as well. And then, Hamas zeshvichut damim, Hamas is spilling of blood, is murder, shenamar, because the Torah says, or the Yoel says, me Hamas b'nei Yehuda asher shafchu dam naki. The Hamas perpetrated against the Judeans when innocent blood was spilled. So Hamas is murdered because it's the spilling of innocent blood. And then finally, Hamas kemashma'o, the Medrash concludes, Hamas is as it sounds, meaning theft or violent theft, as we've said. Okay, what's going on here? This all requires some degree of explanation. So first of all, Hamas ze avodas kochavim. Hamas is idolatry, or literally worship of the stars. Because of the sentence, ki mal'a ha'aretz Hamas, which is the sentence we've been dealing with, for the land is filled with Hamas. Tell me something. How does that sentence, the land is filled with Hamas, how does that indicate anything about idolatry? That is the proof text, exactly. So where's the proof in the proof text? It's a text, but where's the proof? This one's baffling. If you take a look at source number 3, you find two suggestions from the commentary of Matnos Kahuna, who I've quoted here before. His first approach is, Didiyek milas Hamas chimus dvarim kedila el. He first suggests that the word Hamas is used here, is analyzed to mean chimus dvarim, a verbal Hamas, as seen above. He's talking about the medrash that we saw a couple of weeks back, which described mal'a ha'aretz Hamas and said that everybody is guilty, whether the attackers or the victims. Now, when we read that medrash, we said that the attackers are guilty of chimus mamon, Hamas of money, and the victims are guilty of chimus devarim, verbal Hamas, in that they attack verbally, they abuse those who steal from them. So everybody is guilty of some form of abuse. But what the Matnos Kahuna understands is that chimus devarim may not refer to Hamas of words towards other people, but rather chimus devarim refers to verbal abuse of God, declaring something else to be God. That's the way that the Matnos Kahuna takes that medrash, and so he says, maybe kimalaha aris Hamas means idolatry because it's talking about chimus devarim, the words that people bring against God. The problem is that that's a very long reach from this sentence. I mean, something's missing. I need a bridge. I need something in order to help me make that association. It really could have used more explanation. Then he offers you a second approach. Oye Shlomar, he says, still in source number 3, alternatively you could say, Shedarshuhu kmo shedarshu b'megilas Eicha b'pesicha. He says, you could say that they analyzed it the way they did in the introduction to Eicha Rabba, the Medrash on Eicha. That the people were guilty of establishing idols on every furrow out in their fields. You know, they pray to their idol, let their planting be successful, and in every furrow they set up worship. As it says here, the land is filled. In other words, maybe when it says that mal'aha aretz Hamas is idolatry, it's not a play on the word Hamas at all. It's a play on mal'aha aretz. The land is filled. That's a second suggestion. I still have problems with that. Because saying the land is filled doesn't tell me that it's idolatry. The land can be filled with all sorts of things, as we've already seen. So I have great difficulty with this Matnos Kahuna, but I have even greater difficulty understanding the Medrash until I open up the Eitz Yosef. The Eitz Yosef commentary says, you know what? Remember what we said our very first week when Eitz Yosef explained why Medrash is so hard to learn. And one of the points that he made is that over time, as it's been copied over, mistakes have crept into the text. And he says this is an example in which the copyist of some very popular manuscript made a mistake. And it was an easy mistake to make, and everybody emulated it. Take a look, please, at source number 4, and you'll see what the mistake is. And once he says it, you look at it and say, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Sentences in Yechezkel, Ezekiel. Vayaveosi, this is Yechezkel describing a vision. And he says, Vayaveosi, and he brought me, he being some kind of an angel that is transporting Yechezkel in his vision. Vayaveosi el chatzar beis Hashem hapnimis. And he brought me to the inner yard of the house of God. V'hinei pesach heichal Hashem bein ha'ulam u'bein ha'mizbeach ke'esrim v'chamisha ish. In the space at the sanctuary of God's entrance, at the entrance of the sanctuary, between the ulam, which is kind of an entrance hall, and the mizbeach, the altar, there are about 25 men. I don't have any explanation for why 25. I looked a little bit. I didn't see anyone who offered an explanation. If I looked further, I'm sure I would have found, but I didn't see it. But there are about 25 men, bless you. Achoreihem el heichal Hashem. Their backs are to the sanctuary of God. Ufnehem kedma. And their faces are turned east. Vehema mishtachavim kedma lashamesh. They are bowing east to the sun. Remember the structure of the temple, of the Beis HaMikdash. We are used to thinking of the temple as being in the east because we live in North America and therefore Israel is east of us. However, if you're actually in the Beis HaMikdash, if you're in the temple, then you enter from the east and you head west towards the Kodesh Kadashim, towards the Holy of Holies. So that from almost all of the space inside the temple, if you want to face the Holy of Holies, you're facing west. These people in the vision are turned east towards the sun, and they're bowing towards the sun with their back to the ark, with their back to the Aron Kodesh. You have the visual? What does that say to you?
They're sun worshippers.
And it's a degradation of the ark of God. Because they're bowing to the sun and they're turning their back on the ark, right? This is one of the sources for the idea that one standing in a synagogue is not supposed to turn their back on the Aron, on the ark. This reference here. Vayomer Elai, and he, this Malach, said to me, Haraisa ben Adam, have you seen, O son of man? O son of man is a standard term in the book of Yechezkel. Have you seen, O son of man? How light it is for these people, the house of Judea, to practice these abhorrent things that they asherasufo, that they do here. Kimalu es haaretz chamas. They fill the land with chamas. Vayashuvu lahach iseni. They have returned to anger me. They put the foul smell of their idolatrous incense el apam to their noses. There's a whole other association with the foul smell. It's a longer discussion, but to say it in brief, in as polite a way as I can, they add to this image of turning, bowing forward with their backs towards the Ark of God, and they associate it with an idolatry that we find biblically called Baal Peor, in which part of the worship involved excretion. And so they associate that vision of that here in a kind of reverse of that. But the point is that that's the association also of Sholchim et Hazmorai al Apam, the foul smell, is associated with that too. This vision of Yechezkel. But the point is, and the Eitz Yosef brings it here, that here, what does Hamas mean in source number 4?
Idolatry,
right? That's very clear. That's what he's describing. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, the phrase is, Mal'u ki mal'u es ha'aretz Hamas. Look back at our Medrash. Ki mal'a ha'aretz Hamas, says the Eitz Yosef. The original Medrash included the sentence from Yechezkel. Not ki mal'ah haaretz chamas, as we have it in our medrash, which is a sentence from Parashat Noach, right, or from the story of Noach, but rather what it included was ki mal'u es haaretz chamas. So when the medrash wanted to say chamas is idolatry, they referred to the pasuk in Yechezkel. Are we clear? Okay. So that's how we get from chamas to idolatry. Hamas zegilui arayot. Hamas is a reference to immorality. That's the second of the three. So there we quoted a pasuk in Yirmiyahu. The sentence in Yirmiyahu says, Hamasi usheiri al bavel. My Hamas and my she'er are against bavel. What does that mean? So usually, she'er means one's food or one's physical person. When the Torah talks about the obligations that a man has to his wife, one of them is she'er, meaning food. She'er ksud anona. So take a look at source number 5, where Radak, Rabbi David Kimchi, comments on that sentence in Jeremiah, in Yirmiyahu, of my Hamas and my she'er are upon Babylon, and he renders she'er the way we usually would. That it's about one's body or one's food. Here he says, she'eri means bisari, my flesh. Va'amar chamasi al hamamon asher bazizu u'she'eri al hachalalim. So that what Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah, is saying is, my Hamas is upon Bavel, that's the spoils that they took. And my she'er is the corpses, the people who they killed. And that will be the literal read. Our Medrash, though, is doing something different. Our Medrash is taking the word she'er in another way that it is sometimes used, which is to mean one's spouse. She'er can also mean spouse. She'er basar, right. So therefore, our Medrash is taking it that way, not as Radak does, and our Medrash is saying, Chamasi usheiri al Bavel. I am angry at Bavel for what they did with my she'er. It's a reference to immorality. And so Hamas, being next to she'er, that's how they get this association. Does that seem like an ironclad association? No, it does not. Keep that in mind, please. Last one is the simplest one. Hamas is shvichut damim, is spilling of blood. And we quote a sentence from Yoel regarding the Hamas that was committed to the people of Judea. Hamas b'nei Yehuda, asher shavchu dam naki, they spilled their innocent blood. Right? So that one is very clear. Right? That one is very clear. Hamas is the spilling of innocent blood. It was back in source number 1. The Hamas eshvichud damim, when we said that Hamas is murder. So the sentence from Yoel says, the Hamas of the Judeans, meaning the Hamas committed to the Judeans, and he quotes the sentence which says, the Hamas of the Judeans spilling their innocent blood. So Hamas is spilling of innocent blood. That one is relatively straightforward. So that's our Medrash. And then the closing line, Hamas kemashma'o, Hamas is also as it sounds, meaning we're not rejecting the previous Medrash. We're not rejecting the point that Hamas is fundamentally about violent theft. It's also the way it reads regularly, but here Hamas also refers to these three grave sins. That's what the Medrash is saying. So what moral are we meant to learn from this Medrash? What lesson is this Medrash trying to teach us? Putting it all together now. Shayna.
That things had sunk so low that transgressions that we would see as being the result of desperation and truly terrible were ordinary and happening every day.
Okay, so it's the gravity of their sins, essentially. That which I would think, you know, are the top three, right? The top three to avoid. That's what they are guilty of. One possibility. What else? What are we adding to the preceding Medrash? Yeah?
In the immorality, we were talking about social justice.
Mm-hmm. Right. We're adding dimensions to their wickedness.
Yeah.
Right. That's along the lines of what Shana is saying also. But I think there's something else. It's more serious. More than that. All true. But I think there's something else here. Yeah?
These sins are undermine the fundamental fundamental societal, the fundamental way people need to behave in any society. Like mm-hmm. these three things rampant among all the people, it would be impossible to have, like I say, a normal society with this, with these basic elements running rampant.
Right. All true. All true. It's not just that these three are bad, but that they are fundamental society. These are in the big, you know, the mitzvot b'nei Noach, the Noahide laws, for a reason, right? The prohibition against doing these things. But I do think there's something more here.
The addition is that these sins are not only against man, but they're also against God.
Well, you've got the idolatry, certainly, is against God, right?
But in the other two we talked about, that wasn't...
Right. Yes. Although everything is against God,
yes,
ultimately.
Right.
But yeah.
What stands out for me is when they're turning to the sun and away from God, and this angers God. It's almost like... It's like I said last week, it's insulting to God. Like, God doesn't even exist here. And we don't really care about God at all. We're doing our own thing. And it's a total insult to what God stands for. It's the exact opposite.
Mm-hmm. True. But what did we say in last week's Medrash when we talked about identifying Hamas as this not just theft, but thwarting of justice? What did that lead God to declare? Right. You, Asitam Shelo Kishura, you crossed the line, right, by eradicating justice altogether. So I am also going to cross a line. But I think our Medrash is bothered by something here. And I'm going to disagree with what I'm saying now in just a couple of minutes, so don't get too attached to it. But I think that our Medrash is bothered by the fact that ultimately, however you spin it, the previous Medrash said the people stole, they took property from others, and God is now going to wipe out the world. There's a little bit of disproportion. Now, we gave an answer to that last week, and we said it's more than just theft. It's no, you know, having no justice, and that's critical, and so on. Fine. But this Medrash is taking a different approach and saying it wasn't just theft. It was the big three. It was idolatry, adultery, and murder. And with that, God says, I've had enough. I need to wipe them out. I need to start again. That's a second approach that I think our Medrash is providing, but again, don't get too comfortable with it, because I think there's something else that's going on here. Shana?
I was just thinking about the fundamental idea of Hamas and being Gezel, and what is happening with this means what is essentially that you are stealing God's control of the world, and excluding him from his operation of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So you're stealing the world as
in terms of
obviously
I mean, murder, I get. Yeah.
And the Shrikut Anim, right? You know, the passage in Noah where it says, because we are Tzelem Elokim, therefore we have the right to demand justice and pursue it.
Okay.
The murderer.
Right.
And in terms of the Ariyot, I mean, it goes back to what Marilyn was saying earlier, that the family is such a fundamental unit in society, and it becomes also the unit for transmission of belief, right? We know we're Jews because our parents told us.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you disrupt that, if you destroy that, then you disrupt the means of continuity for God's expression in the world.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So that's a whole other dimension to the big three, a usurping of God, basically. Well, the third isn't really usurping, but somehow also damaging of the role of God in the world. Okay. I still think there's something else here. All of these are good ideas, pointing out the gravity of their sins, pointing out why these three in particular are so damaging, suggesting that this is meant to justify the destruction of the world in a way that the previous Medrash did not. These are all valid points. But I do believe there's something else going on here, and the Eitz Yosef is the one who gives us the hint. Take a look, please, at source number 6. The Hebrew is on the bottom of one side. The English is on the top of the other. I apologize for doing that to you. these are the two sentences that lead up to the flood. We've seen them already multiple times. Vayar Elokim es haaretz v'hine nishchasa ki yishchis kol basar es darko al haaretz. God saw the land, and it was corrupted. Right? Is that how I translate it? Corrupted. Ki yishchis kol basar es darko al haaretz, because all flesh had corrupted its path upon the land. Vayomer Elokim l'Noach, and God said to Noach, Kate called Basar Balefanai, the end of all flesh has come before me, or as I now know to translate it based on what we saw last time or the time before that, Kate called Basar doesn't mean the end of all flesh, it's the punishment of all flesh, the chopping up, the thorns, the whole bit, right? The punishment of all flesh has come before me. Kimalah ha'aretz chamas mipneihem, because the earth is filled with chamas due to them. V'hineni mashchisam es ha'aretz, and so I'm going to destroy them with the land. Okay? So what? Yeah?
The land itself has become corrupted, so we're going to destroy it.
That's coming. We're not there yet, but that we're getting there. Okay. So now take a look at source number 7. Source number 7 is brought in by the Eitz Yosef commentary, and it shines a new light on this medrash. Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael. It was taught in the yeshiva of Rabbi Yishmael. Bechol makom shenemar hashchata. Wherever the Torah uses the term hashchata, like it does here, hishchit kol basar, right? We say hashchit was corruption. So he says, Eino ela divar erva v'avodah zara. That refers specifically to immorality and idolatry. Two out of our big three. How do we know that? Divar erva, sexual immorality, shnemar ki yishchit kol basar ed darko. It takes our sentence here, where we said that all flesh had corrupted its path, and understands that to mean, when we emphasize flesh, that the idea is some form of sexual immorality. And then avodah zarah, idolatry, dichsiv, because they quote another sentence, this one from Devarim, pentash chisun v'asisem, etc., warning the Jews who come into the land of Canaan, do not be mashchit, and create idols. So hashchata is associated with idols. Mashchit is just another verb. It's another form of this term hashchata. So the point is that the Talmud there says hashchata is linked to immorality and hashchata is linked to idolatry. Says the Eitz Yosef, our medrash was not picking up on Hamas at all. Hamas is a side point in our midrash. What our midrash is really picking up on is sentence 12. V'hinei nishchata ki yishchit kol basar et darko al haaretz. He saw that the land was nishchata, was corrupted. And what our midrash is doing is saying, what was the corruption? The corruption was those two from the Talmud, idolatry and adultery, and by the way, murder also. So that's the way that the Eitz Yosef explains what our Medrash is doing, and I want to expand this and build on it a little bit, because I think that our Medrash, and I hear what he is saying, but I think he didn't say one other thing that I think is critical. He was probably thinking it, but he didn't say it, so I get points for that. Take a look back at source number 6, please, Hebrew or English, and tell me, what is odd about the flow from sentence 12 into sentence 13? Something's wrong there. Yes, Shana.
So in verse 12 it says, the earth is already corrupted. And then in verse 13 God says, and now I'm going to be mashchit.
So oh, that's an interesting problem. The God says, I'm going to be mashchit, when in fact it's already nishchata in sentence 12. I would do away with that by saying that corruption happens in levels. In other words, they've done something called hashchata, and now I'm going to measure for measure, bring another element of hashchata to it. Something else. It's an interesting point, but I think there's something else here that really should bother us. The fact that it doesn't is because we don't listen carefully. That's just who we are. But the medrash is listening carefully. What did God see? Right, he saw hashchata, this term that we've titled corruption. What did he tell Noah he saw? Hamas. What happened to hashchata? Why doesn't God say to Noah, I saw that the land is nishchat, nishchata? Say that I've seen hashchata. He says, I saw Hamas. He saw one thing, and he said another. That is what the Medrash is picking up on. That's really the engine driving the Medrash. It's that fine ear for language, once again. That's the idea. And so our Medrash solves the problem by saying Hamas equals Hashchata. That when Hashem told Noah, what I've seen is that the land is filled with Hamas, it's the same thing as Hashchata. How is Hamas the same thing as Hashchata? Because Hashchata refers to these big three, right? The two from that passage in the Talmud plus the third, this set of idolatry, adultery, and murder. And so, our Medrash says, guess what? You can associate each of those with Hamas. Hamas is idolatry. Where? The sentence in Yechezkel. Hamas is immorality. Where? Hamasiu She'eri Avavel in Yirmiyahu, which we were bothered and we said, well, is that really such a clear reference? No, it's not. But we need to find something to show that Hamas is like immorality. That is close enough an association that if I'm looking for an association, it's there. It wouldn't be enough in and of itself. But because I have this imperative to link Hamas and Hashchata, that's what I'm going to find. And then the third one, the clear one from Yoel, that Hamas's spilling of blood is murder. So what happens is, our Medrash is bothered by the switch that's played from sentence 12 to 13. God sees Hashchata, but he complains about Hamas. Our Medrash's answer is Hamas and Hashchata are the same thing. And so our Medrash sets out to bring us verses to demonstrate that Hashchata and Hamas are really the same thing. That's what our Medrash is doing, which we did not have in the previous Medrash. That's why we needed this Medrash. The previous Medrash spoke beautifully about the measure for measure that God does to them and the thwarting of justice, and so God says, fine, I'm going to thwart my attributes as well. That was last week. Now our Medrash is actually fundamentally dealing with a different problem, the problem of sentence 12 versus sentence 13. That's the idea. To digress for a moment, though, yeah, there are different schools of drashot, of rabbinic sermons. You'll appreciate this. There are different schools of sermonology, if you will. There's one school of sermonology, which I just made up, but you can use it without a TM. There's one school of sermonology which says that I'm going to speak about, you know, some lofty idea. And it may be anchored in the weekly Torah portion, it might not be, but I'm going to speak about the idea that I have at hand. And then there's another school of sermonology, which is sentence 12 says this, and sentence 13 says this, and I'm going to give you a fine Dvar Torah explaining sentence 11 versus sentence 12, sentence 12 versus sentence 13, and it may have nothing to do with your life whatsoever. But now you understand this biblical verse better. And usually we look down on the latter kind and say, well, it was a fine piece of analysis and it's fine scholarship, but really is that what people need when they are there for a speech? The speech should really be something that relates to their lives. Here, we are doing the latter kind of sermonology, right? We're looking at sentence 12 and sentence 13 and saying, well, there's a conflict here. And now we understand, no, there isn't a conflict here because Hamas and Hashchata are the same. But there is a moral that comes out of this analysis. The moral goes back to the point about why Hashem destroys the world, why bring such a harsh punishment. Because now that I've explained that Hashchata is more than just theft, that Hashchata and Hamas are about these big three, now I have a greater understanding of why Hashem does this to the world. It wasn't just because they destroyed justice, but it's also because there was this systemic problem which they undermined everything through these three grave sins.
Wait,
Yeah.
It had nothing to do with anything God taught me. They were doing everything I did was in vain. They don't believe in anything. They're not
right. So to sum up what we have then, the message of the Medrash is that Hashchata is the same thing as Hamas. The method by which the Medrash comes to it is by looking for biblical uses of Hamas, which are broader than theft, and fit Hashchata. And then the moral of it, the lesson that we are supposed to take away as readers of the Medrash, is that God is not going to harm in such a total way for a crime of one variety. It's a more systemic problem. When I look at God's attributes and God's traits of justice, I understand that it takes more than one thing in order to drive God to such destruction. It's really a more systemic problem. Shana.
The reason we want to come up is to, as it were, defend God's fairness as a judge and say he's not going to destroy us for a tribal.
Right. Well, that's. I don't know if I'd say it's the reason, because I still have to justify 12 verses 13. But it's certainly a lesson that emerges from the analysis, and it's a motivation for anybody who reads the story to understand how could God do this. Absolutely so. Yes.
If these other sins are more fundamental, why was there the need to do that whole thing relating to violent theft? It seems to me that those other three sins that we just talked about today would have been more than enough.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we need that whole violent theft in?
Ah, excellent. So now that we have the second Medrash, and we understand what it does, and is making such a compelling argument, so who needed the first one? What did we need the first one for? Okay, so what's the answer? Again, reminder. The first one was the Medrash that said that Hamas refers not only to theft, but a particular type of theft in which you warp justice altogether, stealing as a community in such a way that no court can actually try you and punish you. Right? And stealing in such a way that you're not even benefiting. It's just to harm the other person. What is that Medrash teaching me now?
I think it's teaching a valuable lesson. Clearly it's teaching a very valuable and important lesson, but again, it doesn't, like the other three obviously would trump that.
So
put them all together.
Yeah.
And you have the whole.
Yvette says, put them all together and you have a composite picture. Go back to our Medrash in source number one and read the closing line.
Oh,
Hamas kimashma'o. Everything that we're saying here. Yeah, or I don't put it over the top, but it's saying we have not come to deny the previous Medrash and the literal meaning of Hamas. What we are doing here amplifies the message and is another facet, but we're not rejecting that first Medrash and the lesson that it teaches us about the importance of the justice of the world. That's the idea. Okay.
I just have a quick
question. Sure.
So was God going to destroy the world just because of the injustice? That wasn't enough. Is that what we're saying?
So, in
the other Medrash it said, yes, I'm going to destroy the world because of this.
So you're asking a really good question to which I don't know the answer. Meaning, this is the problem with Pshat and Drash. We explained in the very beginning of the year that Drash is about having an ear for language. Picking up on things like, hey, in this sentence you said Hashchata, and in this sentence you said Hamas, what's going on? Right? That's a perfect example of the Medrash's ear for language. Pshat, on the other hand, is about story. Trying to figure out what happened. I'm reading these sentences and I want to know what was event A, what was event B, where's the cause, where's the effect, how does the story play out? Where we get into trouble is trying to take the lessons of Drash and apply them to Pshat and say, okay, so now what happened? Now that you've told me that Hamas can be read this way and can be read that way, so what were they doing, and would God have destroyed it just for this and not for that, and so on. And that's where I look at the first words of this Medrash, which says, Davar Acher, which indicates that, in fact, these are two different versions. two different accounts, both visible within the language of the story. Although this second one accepts the idea that Hamas is theft as well, hence the closing words, Hamas kemashmao. But if you're going to ask me, if we were transported back in time and we saw what was going on, what would we have seen? The answer is, I can't tell you. I don't know.
The question for me is, so what is the real reason that God destroyed the world? Because last week we said, oh, because of all the social injustice he's going to do it. Now we're saying, no, there's more.
And we have multiple explanations.
Yeah, so he could have destroyed it just for the social injustice.
I think that's the message.
Yeah.
God isn't going to destroy it just for the social.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm.
Well, what I am seeing.
Yeah.
Is that Hashem gave us a text, which offers us both possibilities.
Oh. Okay.
One by its use of the word Hamas, as we saw last week. One by its use of Hashchatan Hamas, as we see this week. And it's teaching me two different lessons. Maybe the answer is that either would be worthy of it, and that's the message that we need to know. Right, that either one would warrant this destruction.
Okay.
Maybe. These are good questions. I'm just I'm doing the best I can with them to try to answer them. Okay. So that's all this message. I'm gonna